Well, the Arab League has welcomed a UN-backed roadmap to end the conflict in Syria and vowed to support international efforts to implement a ceasefire. The resolution was approved unanimously by the UN Security Council on Friday and sets out a timeline to create a unity government and hold elections. But significant obstacles between the major powers on the Security Council remain, especially over the future of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad.
The majority of the people in the ISSG believe that President Assad has lost the ability, the credibility, to be able to unite the country and to provide the moral credibility to be able to govern it into the future.
I am not too optimistic about what has been achieved today. As to Bashar al-Assad's fate, we talked about that. On principle, we cannot agree with any
любому народу решение о том, кого он хочет видеть своим лидером. Уже было немало примеров в современной истории, когда...
Well, that's the Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov speaking after US Secretary of State John Kerry. So what next for Syria? Professor George Joffe is a senior fellow with the Center for International Studies at Cambridge University. Thanks for your time. Welcome, Professor.
Thank you.
What are the chances of this process being real? What are the chances that the international community will, I suppose, congeal around this concept and push forward with it?
Well, frankly, we don't know. We're only at the beginning of a process now. But the important thing is that all the major players have agreed that they should support it. And that includes Russia and Iran. And that's very significant. And that means that for the very first time inside 5 years, all the leading powers that are involved in Syria are agreed that they should do something about the situation there. Whether it will involve the removal of President Assad is another matter. My suspicion is that it won't in the first stages, at least. But again, the only way in which he will be persuaded to go is because Iran and Syria have been involved. And that in itself is a major step forward.
Is it not implicit in any process that he will ultimately have to go anyway? What's the necessity to say from the outset, as the Western powers are, that he must agree to go before we proceed?
Well, one very good reason is the fact that he's not gone over the last 4 years, despite repeated calls from Western powers that he should. And he has support, not just from Iran and Russia, but also inside Syria itself. He does represent the concerns, anxieties and fears of the minority communities there, and they still do support him. And therefore, you can't simply ignore that. It means, in effect, that you have to accept that your primary target is the question of ISIS or Daesh, the Islamic State, and that the secondary target is the removal of Assad from power. And again, what does that actually mean? Does it mean the removal simply of President Assad himself, or does it mean the removal of the whole system that supports him? No one's clear on that. No one knows. And in fact, what's been very interesting in recent weeks has been the way in which Western powers have come round very reluctantly to accept that President Assad, certainly for the transitional period, will probably remain in power.
Doesn't it seem clear, though, from the language that certainly the US has been using most recently, that they're not necessarily talking about entirely replacing the regime, that what they care about is the man at the top of it?
You're quite right. They certainly do care about the man at the top of it. But they also understand now that maybe they can't achieve as their primary objective his removal, and that they've been prepared to fall in line behind the Russian insistence that that decision should be taken at the end of a process of transition rather than at the beginning. And that's a very significant change. It's still a very fragile coalition. It's still very uncertain as to whether all the members will agree. But nonetheless, they've begun the process of finding a common ground from which they can move forward.
What potentially do you think a Syrian regime without Assad would look like? Is it led by one of the key intelligence figures in the country, a military figure, someone else potentially from that that community of Alawites?
There's no doubt in my mind that any successor regime will be led either by a member of the Alawite community or by a member of the Druze community, because they're the dominant communities behind the current regime. It will certainly be related to the security services or the army, and it will not be substantially different in terms of its nature and in terms of the way in which it articulates its power from what exists at the moment. What it may be is one that's prepared to begin to negotiate meaningfully with an opposition that in fact detests it and wishes to remove it.
Central to any vision that the United States certainly has for defeating ISIS is the Kurds, both in Syria and in Iraq. How do you push forward with a solution in Syria, or at least a united campaign in Syria against ISIS, when Turkey, which is a key partner, has such a different view of the Syrian Kurds from what the United States has?
Well, you need to ask the question why the Turks are so concerned about the Kurds. And it's not because of the Kurds as such. They have very good relations, for example, with the Kurds inside Iraqi Kurdistan. Their real concern is about the extremist group, the PKK, and its correlate inside Syria. And they therefore fear that if they're left in power, Turkey itself will find itself threatened in terms of the loyalty of its own Kurdish communities. And beyond that, too, President Erdogan went out of his way during the recent elections to mobilize the Kurdish community, or to rather mobilize antagonism towards the Kurdish community, to try to undermine its role inside Turkey and to guarantee his own re-election. And that means that he's now created for himself a rod with which to beat him. And until he comes to terms with the fact that the PKK, undesirable and threatening though it is, represents a genuine point of view with which he has to negotiate rather than fight, I'm afraid Turkey is not going to be a really viable partner for the Western project.
So can this be done without Turkey? Isn't Turkey necessary? Can you not do something to assuage Erdogan's concerns about the Syrian Kurds and, as you point out, the connection with the Kurdish party and the Kurdish groups within Turkey?
Well, that's a very interesting question. In theory, it should be possible for the Turks to understand that they must come to terms and restore the negotiations that they had before with the Kurds. But in practice, it's probably unlikely that in the short term that can be done. But there are alternatives. Saudi Arabia has just put together a new coalition, which it claims will be prepared to move against the extremists. If that were to be true, then perhaps Turkey could be marginalized. It's also possible that American support for the Iraqi army, which is certainly currently underway in Fallujah and in Ramadi, might produce the basis by which boots on the ground can be produced from inside Iraq itself. And then there is beyond that the possibility that Egypt might intervene too. So there are still possibilities, but you're right, Turkey really would be the key. And until Mr. Erdogan is prepared to understand that the real threat to Turkey and its stability lies inside the Islamic State, it's going to be very difficult to see an effective way forward.
Professor George Joffe, thank you very much for talking to us.
You're welcome.
Professor George Joffe is Senior Fellow with the Centre for International Studies at Cambridge University, speaking to us via Skype.